Tom Slate, President and CEO, U.S. Grains Council.
Tom, let's begin with what is planned for a two-day summit in the Twin Cities this week. I know ethanol and foreign markets are kind of being brought together. What's going on?
Well, yeah, Mark, thanks so much. It's our second in a series of ethanol summits. We had one a short time ago focusing on the Western Hemisphere, on the Americas. This week here in Minneapolis, we're getting together with the Asia-Pacific region and having a summit on ethanol. It's basically talking about ethanol policies and ethanol, the values of ethanol and ethanol market growth from a global perspective, and how countries can sort of share in that progress on, you know, reaching their goals on whatever country may have in terms of ethanol and biofuel blending.
Well, let's talk about some of the policies, some of the technology that's most important to those countries and the potential that exists in those countries.
A lot of it is focusing on, you know, how comparing notes and how different countries have developed ethanol, you know, policies and ethanol into their biofuel mix. So we're going to share a little bit with, you know, success stories, like, for instance, in Japan, what's going on in China, what's happened in the United States, even taking a little bit of look at what's happened in Brazil. And so it gives, you know, these are mainly a policymakers, some marketers, some industry officials, a kind of a nice blend of all of the above, kind of a good point of reference for, you know, how they can approach it in their countries and make a difference. And so, you know, we build upon this in terms of market growth, and certainly it's corollary to talking about sales. Although it's just not a strong sales push necessarily, it's certainly in the background in the corridor conversations of what's going on in terms of supplies of U.S. supply on things like ethanol. And, you know, again, the benefits of ethanol, too. We spent a lot of time on that.
And I would think the obvious attraction to biofuel lies in the environmental benefits and potentially price. Although, you know, for the United States, with the amount of corn that we have for ethanol, we're able to see a very competitive price at the pump. But I don't know if that's the case in other countries where ethanol is available, but certainly the environmental impact has to stick out.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, we talk a lot about the environmental impact. And certainly, we have countries here like China, like India, who have some very serious environmental air quality problems. And we talk about, you know, speakers from like the Lung Association and folks like that. But also, we do talk about, you know, the competitiveness of ethanol as an octane, source of octane, and how they can, better manage the prices of their fuel for the general public through using a competitively priced octane product into their gasolines. And that point is not lost. That point is a very strong one, particularly now, as the U.S. is in a very competitive position globally. And, people know it, and I think that's going to start to open up some doors.
From a USGC perspective, is the excitement more on if another country is looking to build up a domestic supply and they're going to need the grain, they're going to need the corn to turn into ethanol, and that's where you see a lot of potential with USGC? Or is it also, at least partially, just the potential of exporting U.S.-made ethanol to these countries?
I think it's more of the latter, Mark. I think it's, you know, I think we first see the first opportunity for ethanol, direct ethanol exports to various countries. There's some places where they're looking at importing corn and making ethanol directly, you know, say close to the ports. I don't think that's as well developed now as just a sheer recognition that it's a very cost-effective thing to do to import the ethanol directly. And we're seeing that particularly if you look at places like Mexico or even in Japan. It makes a lot more sense. Japan does, you know, import ETBE that is actually refined in the U.S. So, you know, the marketing channels are there. They need to look at how they can improve those marketing channels and make them more competitive. But it's mainly the ethanol is what we're looking at first. And, you know, down the road, that might possibly be. But always in these countries, we talk about biofuel policy, improving air quality, improving the efficiencies of using ethanol as an octane source. And, how those can work together to again benefit their populations and their economies. And that's the major thrust of this conference.
I think it's safe to say that ethanol and biofuels really a great success story for the U.S. But I'm wondering if some of the recent uncertainty on the renewable fuel standard is complicating the conversations that, like you're having this week with these other countries that are maybe feeling a little bit uneasy about long-term certainty when you have the EPA talking about a cap on RINs, talking about all these potential changes to the RFS. Is that causing a problem, Tom?
It's not causing a direct problem. I think it does, as you mentioned, raise some eyebrows about, hey, you know, what's going on here? How is this going to affect you as a partner in a trading environment? Certainly, we're concerned about the talk about having export gallons qualify for RINs. That is something that can be a real problem for us in terms of being perceived as a subsidy. And we've already heard from key importers about, you know, hey, is this something that you're supporting? Because again, we've experienced this, a lot of these sorts of issues in other crops, particularly like DDGs and sorghum and things like that. That is a tough battle when you get into when they start, you know, trading allegations on things like that, on countervailing duties and all the such. So we're very concerned about that, following it very closely, and of course working very closely with our friends at the Growth Energy and Renewable Fuels Association on how this all plays out.
Anything else on the summit?
No, it's just it's a very vibrant environment to see all these people getting together with common interests of the ethanol business. Not a common language, but there's common interest on subject matter. And it's, you know, again, having all these countries together, over 200 people from around the, you know, the Asian Pacific arena, very, very exciting, very dynamic environment.
Tom, how significant was the news over the weekend that China was essentially backing off on its tariff threats on agricultural goods? And I guess I'll steer right to the sorghum issue first. And what's taken place there with U.S. sorghum exports to China and some of those walls that have been knocked down?
Well, you know, the big thing news is that it's a step in the right direction. You know, instead of escalating the trade tensions between China and the United States, we're starting to de-escalate them. We're starting to talk to each other and start to remove some of these barriers that have been put up. And yes, the preliminary duty, anti-dumping duty of 178.6% on U.S. sorghum, that was terminated. You know, not removed, it was terminated. I like that word. And so it allows us to get back to, you know, business, get back to a more reasonable discussion about how competitively priced feed grains can work into China's, you know, feed rations. And again, same sort of deal with ethanol, help improve the quality of life for general citizens through more efficient meat production and things like that. So it's a step in the right direction. And, you know, we're very glad to see that. But there's still a lot of other things, a lot of other barriers we need to talk about and talk very frankly about with China to make some more broad progress.
Yeah, with sorghum, it was hard for me to even really wrap my head around the idea that you had these huge cargo ships that were just sitting there idle as these duties were placed on the exports. I mean, it's kind of hard to fathom what transpired there, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, people were caught out of position. I think the speed at which this case with the anti-dumping case was executed was phenomenal, totally unprecedented, which again caught people out of position. And then so you had, you know, the council worked very hard to find alternative markets for those ships. We were able to find some great markets in Spain and Saudi Arabia. And so you see these ships doing U-turns in the ocean to places like Saudi Arabia, and the news are doing U-turns back to China. So because again, the duty was removed. And so it's a real challenge. And this is where traders really earn their stripes. And when you get into adverse situations like this, it's difficult. This is why these companies, you know, exist to deal with these kinds of risks. But our core problem is the feed millers that we work with in China. They want the product. They need the product, and they want the product. And so we're glad to see them finally getting it.
Sorghum big in China. Obviously, we always talk about soybean exports from the U.S. to China. But from a grain perspective, if China follows through on their promises to buy more, what other markets could we see really blossom?
We would really like to see some progress to get back to where we were, you know, about 6 years ago on corn exports to China. U.S. corn is very competitive into China. And, you know, for various reasons, political, trade-wise, China turned away from, biotechnology, big part of that. China turned away from the U.S. as a supplier of corn. We believe very strongly that we can get in there and sell a lot more U.S. corn. But again, we need to have some fundamental change and on China's policies governing biotech acceptance and biotech approvals. They're still very, very obscure, opaque, and I think that the U.S. negotiators are very well aware of that. So we want to make sure that we focus on that as well as the duties that still exist on U.S. DDGs. Again, same sort of story. U.S. DDGs, very successful product in China. Chinese feed millers want it. They like it, the product. They want to use it. But they have right now about 68% duties overshadowing that marketplace, and that, you know, makes it very difficult to work that product in there. So we'd like to get the duties removed on DDGs. We'd like to have biotech reform happen allow U.S. corn better access. And then there's still an additional 15% tariff on U.S. ethanol that still obstructs that market for us. And that has to be addressed as well. So like I said, sorghum's a great start. We're glad to see that. We'll see sorghum start moving back into that marketplace in the next few months. But you know, these other grains are really important to us. And of course, the soybeans are important to us. But that's not our specialty. So.
And last thing I've got for you, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, so to speak, but the idea that corn could get greater access into China, you know, we've seen several years of low commodity prices and corn now just trying to fight to stay above that $4 level. Boy, if China could open up, what that could mean to prices down the road, pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, we are seeing strong, you know, feed grain exports around the world and corn exports and everywhere else in the world except for China. So yeah, if China can come back on line as a market source, that would be good news, and certainly if the ethanol can come back on, that'd be good news for farmers. So that's what we're working for every day, trying to make those changes to improve demand pull.